Welcome to The Confessional. I'm Mike Moran. Tell us your deepest, your creepiest, your funniest. Confess to us. No one's listening. All right, everybody, welcome to the Confessional Podcast. My name is Mike Moran, and I am joined today by co-host, friend of the Confessional, great dude, we love this guy, Paul Hayes, everybody. Hi, Paul.
It is actually Haynes.
Did I say Haynes?
It's okay, common mistake. Yes, you said Hayes.
I thought I said Haynes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's Paul Haynes.
Again, very, very good friend of mine, Paul. Paul, of course, is from the I'll Be Gone in the Dark book and miniseries, which came out a few years ago. And he is going to be co-hosting today with our topic of body horror. And we have our guest today, who is from a very cool podcast that I've been listening to recently. It's a slow-burning kind of fiction horror story podcast. It is called Twisted Mirror. I definitely recommend you check it out. Please welcome Nina G, everyone.
Hi.
Hi,
thanks,
Nina,
for having me. Hi, everyone.
Thanks so much for coming. Tell us about this Twisted Mirror podcast you got going.
Sure. So I've always, ever since I was a kid, I loved The Twilight Zone. That was like my introduction.
Yes.
To, you know, it's horror, but it's not just horror, right? There's more to it. Like each episode often is its own little allegory or there's something to it. And so I've always been into that kind of genre. I like all types of horror, but the kind of make you think stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so that was my inspiration to start doing Twisted Mirror. I also
know. Do you write every episode or?
Almost every episode, yes.
Oh,
if there's
wow.
a guest writer, I think I've had maybe, I think one guest story on the main feed. Sometimes I'll have some on Patreon. I have had guest narrators, like you've had True Crime Campfire on. I've had both Whitney and Katie do narration. I had Whitney
Love
do
Whitney
my
Katie.
Southern Gothic one because I was like, I can do some voices, but I was like, I do not want to sound like, what's that rooster?
Foghorn Leghorn,
yeah, or whatever. When I've got, you know, a genuine.
You didn't want to turn
into
an episode of Mama's Family.
exactly. And she did such a great job with it. And then, you know, there's increasingly this is closing, but there's, I feel like there's a gap in like the woman's point of view in horror. And so I do try to bring that and just the experience, you know, just the point of view that often isn't seen. Women are in horror a lot, but a lot of the stories aren't told from the female perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of my stuff is existential. So just the fears that I think a lot of people feel of just getting through the day. I had an epiphany the other day. It was like, you know, most of my stories are just like the intrusive thoughts that I
love
have.
Absolutely.
And then I just feed them. I bring them to life.
So you bring, you take the intrusive thoughts and you what's the word? Personalize? You humanize them? You
humanize,
turn them into characters?
Or I let them become monsters. Meaning, you know, we all have those thoughts. Like you're having a recent episode was just, I had a package that was just not like I could not track it. And I kept trying to call and just get like a human being on the line, just one human being.
Sure.
And I couldn't even get like the automated system would just hang up on me. It would just say, sorry, we're not going to help you. It literally said,
it sends you to like one other robot and that robot sends you back. And then the other robot asks you like what life is and how the humans
and
feel. And
it frankly, it just said, we're not going to give you, the robot said, I'm not going to pass you to a human. Goodbye. And just hung up. And I was just like ready to just like break furniture. And immediately I had a story idea based on that. And it was like, you know what? It's like therapy in a way.
Yeah. These are very creative stories. I love the premises of them. I could totally see them working as like, you know, a Twilight Zone-esque TV show. Do you have any fantasies of bringing this to the screen?
I don't think there's a writer that wouldn't. if I would love that. And I think it is capable of that because I often write backwards in the sense that when I write things, I'm actually a big like watcher of movies and television. So when I write, it's more like I'm writing for that.
Right.
In my head, I'm visualizing that than trying to replicate, you know, great writers or something like that. I want it to be very approachable and almost like you can see it in your head.
Right. Absolutely. You know, which one I like? The one where the little, like different little boys keep showing up every day.
Oh,
at the cabin.
Little girls. But yes, that was,
was it little girls?
That was my first episode. Yes.
So spooky.
What came with the storm. Yeah.
Right. That was the very first episode. What gave you that idea?
That one actually just started with the idea of how creepy it would be if I was sitting alone in a cabin in the woods, very isolated in a storm, and I just looked out my window in the middle of the night and a child was just standing there.
Right,
just standing there without saying a word, you know, the front porch light hitting her.
Sure.
And what would, like, how can I build a story around that imagery? Because I find that imagery alone so freaky. Like, what is this child doing here miles from civilization in the middle of a storm? Creepy children, you know. They scare everyone.
Right.
That's a universal thing, I think. Even parents and kids will be creeped out of their own kids.
Sure.
By their own kids, by, you know, showing up.
Absolutely.
And then the story just built from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, everybody should definitely check out the Twisted Mirror podcast. It's excellent. I can't say enough good things about it. And if they wanted to find you on Instagram, Nina, where would they find you?
It is Twisted Mirror, at Twisted Mirror Podcast.
All right. And also, as our co-host today, Paul Haynes is here. Paul, can you give us your definition of body horror? Well, how would you describe it?
I would say it's any narrative that explores, I think, everyone has an innate fear of our body sort of failing us or falling apart or turning against us. I would say even like those autonomous hand horror movies, you know, like
the Addams Family
or Mad Love, the Addams Family. Yeah. I would even classify those as body horror, but obviously Cronenberg is the first artist who comes to mind when talking about body horror.
Absolutely.
Most of his work explores, body horror on a deeper, more complex level.
Sure. Would you say The Fly is the prime example of a Cronenberg body horror film, or?
I would say it's like the most well-rounded and accessible example. Uh-huh. It's my favorite Cronenberg movie.
Okay. Nina, what's your, how would you describe body horror?
I would describe it similarly. I think any film in which the person loses control over their body in some way. So I think of, you know, most people probably think of The Fly as like the first image of what that could be. But something even like Alien, right?
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily the body turning against itself, though that to me is a big component of that. But even just something invading one's body.
Right,
and
right.
then you becoming, you know, a host for something. So your body is no longer yours. And then the, you know, things, kind of movies where your body turns on you in some way is another
one. And I would say aging is that, really. I think fear of aging is perhaps at like the emotional core of The Fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's a weird thing. Like right now I'm watching my body go through reverse puberty. It kind of seems like, you know,
do you want to get like, specific?
Not really.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just turned 40 in October and I was like, oh, I feel great. Everything's great. And then like a month in, all these health things started happening and it was like clockwork. It's like, you're 40, get ready.
Like, right. Yeah.
It's humbling. It's very humbling. And I'm actually writing the next episode I have is kind of based on my own, I guess, facing those challenges and my own mortality. Mm-hmm. Basically just waking up one day and realizing like, oh, things are changing and there's nothing you can do to stop it. You can eat as well as you want and do all the things right and it'll slow things down, but there's an inevitability there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I do feel though that we live in an era where people, I think, look objectively younger and healthier in general. You guys agree with this? Like when I look at pictures of my parents at my age or my grandparents at my parents' age, it's like not even, it's, you know, it's not even, it's like, you know, it's, I don't think it's just perspective and clothing hairstyles. I think people really are looking younger.
Yeah, for sure. I think, well, there's a couple of just obvious ones where people learned about the sun, like, and what it does, and smoking. I mean, if there's anything that ages you, smoking is really hard. And maybe this is the other thing where I think starting with millennials, but even Gen X, we've kind of retained, I think there was this idea like you become a certain age and you have to like give up your youthful exploits. You know, if you like to collect comic books or things like that, or dress a certain way, you know, like especially for women.
Right.
Yeah. You would, you know, I remember in my head, like seeing 30 something year olds on TV as a kid and they would dress really matronly and it was like time to chop off all your hair and start dressing in like your mid 30s.
Right.
And obviously now we're seeing people in their 50s and they're looking cool and vibrant. But at the same time, I think we're also seeing this like really strong fear of aging, especially in the younger crowd. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with just social media and how it kind of exposes us to constant perfection.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, younger and younger people are
doing my account doesn't. So you're safe with that.
It kind of feeds into if you're already in that loop, it's just get stronger. But yeah, it's younger and younger people are kind of obsessed with how can I battle aging? And they're like, it's like, you're 20 and they're already like, I got to go get Botox or do all these things to, there's just like a big like fear around it.
Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah. It's almost harder now that it kind of seems like there's an option to not age. Like back in the day, you're kind of, you just do, your body just does what it does, you know?
Yeah. It was kind of just like, accepted.
Yeah.
People just are like, oh, I'm going to gain weight. I'm going to whatever. And
yeah, I feel like no matter what I do, I just have this like round shape now. Even when I'm skinny, I'm still somehow chubby. I don't understand it. So strange. All right, let's read a confession here, you guys. This is from Andy Peterson, Fort Collins, Colorado. The aforementioned fly has always been a terrifying idea to me. I still think the original version is so effective when they show the fly with the human head trapped in the spider web. Imagine the story from the fly's perspective as it starts to become more human. Well, I feel like the fly got an upgrade. He got the good end of that deal. Come on.
Yeah. I didn't. I've never thought of it from that perspective. I'm trying to I mean, he becomes – I'm thinking of the Jeff Goldblum – is that right. – that's not the original, is it?
No, no. There's an old –
Vincent
like,
Price.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Was that like the 50s, Paul?
I think it was 59.
Okay.
Yeah, late 50s, 58, 59.
Have you seen that one?
I have not.
What's yeah, it, what's
it's
it like, Paul?
It's charming. It's totally different from the Cronenberg one.
Is it like, does it come off as real campy and silly?
No,
or is it like,
no, it's, I think remains just below the threshold of camp. It's still engaging, I think, in a straightforward way. Okay. It's just, it is drier, obviously.
Sure. Does, you know, does the new one really feel like a remake of it, or is it just kind of like...
No, it feels like a reimagining of it. I think the 80s, you know, saw a number of...
The Blob.
I hate that phrase. Reimaginings of, you know, horror from the 50s, The Blob being one of them. The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
boomer nostalgia. I'm almost, am I the only one that almost has a nostalgia for 50s nostalgia from the 80s? You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I see what you're saying.
I share that.
Do you have that,
Nina?
No,
yeah, I get it.
I think, you know, kind of began with American Graffiti.
Yeah.
In the early 70s. What was that?
No, yeah.
God, so American Graffiti was like what 15 years past the heyday of the 50 of what people think
I think it was I believe it was like one of the first 50s nostalgia movies.
So it'd be like if we did 2009 right now.
Yeah, that, it was much like Darnie Darko may have been the first 80s nostalgia movie, which was I think like what 11 years out.
The 80s, it's so weird. Like I feel like I guess certain decades just kind of lend more, like they stand out more as like something you can go back to.
Well, I think the farther you drift from a, a particular decade, the more obvious its aesthetic it becomes.
Yeah, for sure. Because we're already
I have no idea what anything looks like past the rap metal era. Or like, you know what I mean? Like, I have no idea what styles have come and gone since I graduated from high school, basically.
Well, yeah, they're already... the 90s are already making a comeback, and that, and it's true. Like, when I remember even being a kid in the 90s or the early 2000s and being like, there's no way anyone's going to look back at this time and find a signature style, you know, like the 80s or like the 50s. Yeah. And now I'm seeing Gen Z and younger.
Totally.
They'll do like videos of like what my mom looked like in the 90s or something, and their dress. Right. And I'm like, oh my God, I definitely see it. And they're the 90s are already making a comeback.
I went to the county fair last summer, and all the kids were wearing Nirvana and like Rob Zombie t-shirts.
Yeah, and even there's specific things like high turtlenecks, like and a certain type of like jeans that mom used to wear.
Yeah, that
like
whole that
dark
whole jeans.
Lipsticks. Yeah, yeah. And the Rachel haircut. That
right.
Only.
It's like it doesn't seem like a style. That just seems like normal. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem like. That's like when you realize that you have an accent as an American, you know, it's like, oh,
yeah,
other people exactly. think I have an accent. Yeah. But mine was just the standard. All right. So, Nina, what is your favorite body horror film, media, book, TV show?
This is going to be I think it's going to be controversial because this is one that there's a lot of people hate this movie. And I think when I first watched it, I didn't even know what to make of what I was watching. And then I watched it subsequent times and I found it hilarious. It's probably not the word that people would describe horror, but I found it hilarious in a horrific way. And that is Tusk.
Oh, a lot of people mentioned Tusk when we reached out about this one.
Okay. Yeah. And Kevin Smith wrote that movie. That's his movie. And
oh, wow.
There's something. So first of all, Justin Long. Mm-hmm. I thought I had only felt this way myself, but then it started to kind of get memeified, which is that I love to watch him in horror. I enjoy watching him suffer. And I mean that as the highest compliment. Like, he makes suffering fun to watch. He really brings, and I mean that he knows how to play the perfect prick so that when he's going through
Barbarian.
Exactly. Exactly. Actually, I saw Barbarian. I went in blind, and they kind of do like the psycho thing where they introduce like a big character in the middle, and that was him. And I was at home watching with my husband, and I started screaming because I was just like so excited that we're gonna get to watch Justin Long suffer. That's what happened.
That is a beautifully structured movie. It sort of just starts over in the middle, but then it folds back in on itself.
Yes, right. It becomes something completely different from what you thought it was gonna be. Mm. And that's why I hearken back to Psycho, which was probably the first movie of its kind to do that to an audience, or at least in the horror genre, where you think it's going to be about one thing, this woman on the run, stealing a bunch of money, and,
and the main character taxidermy.
And the main character gets offed, and you're like, whoa, there's a lot of time. There's a lot of runtime on this movie left, and she's gone. So he's similarly in Tusk. He's not the greatest guy, not that he deserves what ends up happening to him, but it is such a wild ride. I like movies that kind of just take me on a ride. Sure. And like I said, the first time I had no idea where it was going. I didn't understand what I was watching. And each subsequent watch, I liked it more and more because once I understood where it was going, I could pay more attention to the details and the silliness and some of the jokes.
Right. See, and I'll tell you this, Nina, like I feel like it almost makes it more horrific when it's kind of like silly, when it's kind of like campy, because it's like this horrible physical thing happening to this person and we're not even like taking it seriously, like that almost freaks me out more for some reason.
Exactly. And the person who is doing it to him is completely insane in the like truest sense of the word. There's no rhyme or reason. You know, watching it multiple times, the story, there's no reason, there's no logical explanation for his obsession with this walrus and this idea of the walrus that he has to transform. There's no purpose to it. It's just this guy being put through the ringer by this maniac.
Yeah.
And then the physical element, you know, that moment where he just wakes up it turns so fast. So it goes from this guy traveling to basically the middle of nowhere to do this interview for a podcast, and kind of makes fun of podcasting as well. The kind of talking heads, two dude bros, that kind of thing. And you sense something's up. He's going to a dark, creepy house, and you know, right, something's going to happen. But when he just wakes up, and it immediately just is like a roller coaster from that point. It happens so fast and so drastically. And again, that loss of control, there's at that point, you know, there's no ending that is going to be positive for this guy.
Right.
He mutilates him so quickly. And yeah. And I there's so many funny moments to me in the darkness that kind of make it not just pure torture, that it's not just pure gore. There's
sure
levity in it, so it makes it more watchable.
Right. Have you seen Tusk, Paul?
No, I've seen Alejandro Jodorowsky's Tusk, but I've not seen Kevin Smith's
There's
Tusk.
More than one Tusk? What does Alejandro's Tusk look like?
It's about elephants. It's about an elephant, I think, in Africa. It's like his attempt at a family movie. I believe it's largely unavailable. I'm a Jodorowsky completist, so.
Oh, okay. How are movies unavailable in this day and age?
There are many movies that are just not available. You have to like use torrent sites to find them.
Yeah. A lot of That's lost one. Media and probably
lost will. Media.
Yeah. Lost yeah. media is another good topic for a podcast.
Oh, it's a great topic.
Yeah. That is a great topic. And lots of like rumored videos that have gone, you know, that are just lore. Everyone's heard of a certain video and never
Absolutely.
Seen it.
Kudos to companies like Vinegar Syndrome, who are, you know, salvaging these lost titles and giving them 4K restorations.
Nice.
They're doing
nice.
Amazing work over there.
And of course, the Holy Grail, from what I've heard, is that Lon Chaney film, right? The
London After Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is the Holy Grail.
Have you seen what was the one with the clown? The day the clown
the man
cried.
Who man who laughed
no
oh Jerry Lewis so yeah, Jerry. No nobody has seen that outside of I think Harry Shearer and a few other people. However, I believe this is the year that Library of Congress will be scheduling public screenings of that.
Really?
I think Jerry Lewis had given a print to the Library of Congress with the stipulation that a certain number of years had to pass after his death before it could be screened. I think it's been about, 5 years since Jerry Lewis died?
I feel like more than that.
It feels like more than that, but you know, I feel like time is now, compressed in a weird way where there's people
Absolutely.
That I swear died that haven't died.
Dude, that's what's horrific to me. Do you have any episodes on that, Nina? On like that, and I recently learned there's no word for this, but like that horrible feeling of time like going faster every year?
Not specifically that, but I do have a time slip one.
Nice.
Where someone loses a significant period of their life. I don't, you know, we're giving stuff away. That one's called
Where They Go. Are they blackout drunk?
It's they're a little less culpable of their circumstances. They just are unlucky, but they basically find themselves missing 7 years. Without explaining how or why, because I don't want to ruin it. And
sure. That's how I feel about pop culture. Like, I feel like I just like after the new millennium, like I was so plugged into every like genre, every, like I could tell you where like rock music changed in this year and the night. And then afterward, it's just a total blackout.
Well, I think the world has become a less interesting place with smartphones and the access that we have to information. The disappearance of like pay phones. We don't use maps.
Right.
So that just gives characters on screen less to do. And I think it's the image of someone scrolling through a smartphone, it's very hard to make that visually compelling.
Sure.
I also think there's just so many niches now. There's these like entire subcultures that are so specific because there's so much information and people, you know, before all this, there was like television. And everyone watched the same big shows. Even when we had cable, everyone tuned into the same stuff. Right, there were the same radio stations, generally the same top few hits. Now if there's almost something for everyone. And as a result, we're not all tuning into the same things as much.
Right.
So it kind of splinters.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This is from Alicia Pote from Baltimore. Black Swan. The nail cutting scene with the mother was particularly memorable. As someone who has long struggled with disordered eating, I think Aronofsky did an outstanding job of illustrating the control issues that drive this brand of neuroticism. Professional dancing delivers enough body horror on its own, but the popping feathers and such take it to more conventional horror territory. Black Swan. Have you seen Black Swan, Nina? Would you consider that body horror?
Oh, yes. And absolutely. That one even slipped my mind to be on the list. Yes. And that is a great example of something that's more woman-centered. And I think, sure, as shown by your listener, really resonates with, you know, eating disorders and the concept of control and how that feeds into that. And also, you know, we have that whole, what is reality in there? So with that one especially, I think it does a really good job. It is body horror, but it also shows the connection between mind and body and how,
absolutely,
as you're watching this, you know, you're not really sure what to believe, what's real, what's not real. And so it kind of connects those two things. It's not just pure body gore where you're just trying to solve a problem in your body or there's an invader. It's almost like, where does it start? Is the horror body first or is it mind first? And yeah, I think that's a great nomination for
a top horror. Yeah, and it's interesting that she mentioned the shoe scene with the nails, which is that totally stood out to me as well now that I'm thinking about it. You know what I mean? And that was totally real life. You know, that wasn't like a horrific fantasy thing.
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes it's just those little things that really give you the ick, for lack of a better phrase, to be very current. It doesn't take, or often I just saw, I'm going to butcher this, I think, because it's Titanium, but the movie Titan, it's like French. It is a body horror movie. And a lot of the gruesome stuff you don't see, you just kind of hear.
Because the camera won't fully show. The squishing.
Yeah, you'll hear and you might see the character doing something. You can see their physical movements, but the thing is happening off screen. And I found myself grimacing at some stuff, even though I'm not seeing anything. Right, a lot more than I would at someone getting their arm chopped off and like blood spewing out or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think even though you're seeing the toes, like you said, it's almost in a way, I could see that happening to my foot. In fact, I used to play volleyball and they didn't look like that, but there were seasons where all my toenails would turn black and fall off.
Right.
The constant starting and stopping.
Yeah. I'm experiencing it right now with my neck and back leaning over to talk into this microphone.
I've got like a back support on this chair. Body horror happening live. Yeah. So I totally forgot. Didn't even occur to me to bring that one up. That's a great one.
Absolutely. Have you seen that one, Paul?
Yeah, I saw it back in 2010. I think Aronofsky, he flirts with body horror in some of his other work as well. I would say Requiem for a Dream. That's one of the few moments I've had to turn away. When Jared Leto injects his infected arm in the car. And there's another scene recently in a movie I watched, I can't recall which, and I think it was a needle going into a vein or I can't with needles. But I think, you know, Aronofsky's, you know, I wouldn't even call it like a preoccupation with body horror is less obsessive than Cronenberg's.
Right.
And I feel like it's sort of like it dots his work the same way it does with like Polanski's, although I'm like loath to reference Polanski, but
yeah.
Rosemary's Baby, I would say, is somewhat body horror.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. That's ultimate loss of control over your autonomy and your body.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Paul, you said earlier your favorite is, did you say The Fly or Videodrome?
No, The Fly. The Fly would be my favorite body horror.
Well, tell us why you love The Fly.
I think The Fly is a lot more emotionally resonant than most of Cronenberg's work. I think Cronenberg is generally a dry director, but The Fly really is moving. The romance between Goldblum's character and Gina Davis's character is deeply felt. You do love these characters, and there's no real villain outside of what is the actor's name? Is it Stan Getz? I have to fucking look it up.
Yeah, the other guy.
The other guy. Yeah, I think he's like the most villainous human character in the film. But it just really feels complete as a film. I think there's a tendency to like look at horror, at least up until recently, I think horror is becoming a prestige genre, but there's a tendency to like evaluate horror films through a different lens.
Oh, yeah.
But there are movies obviously like Rosemary's Baby and The Fly that transcend the genre and are just great films. And, you know, the end of The Fly, when I don't want to spoil anything for listeners who haven't seen The Fly, but also if you haven't seen The Fly, that's your problem.
It's a middle-aged movie. It's like, if it were a person, it'd be middle-aged. if it were a person.
But when Goldblum emerges looking like just like an object, begging Gina Davis to shoot him, it's hard for me not to cry.
Yeah,
and it's few horror films have that such a complete emotional effect.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and sure. I would argue, I mean, if it was just some guy turning into a fly and skin chunks falling off and all that, it would still be great. But that extra layer.
Yeah, that seems to be what separates the good horror from the bad, which, you know, like Nina, I like bad horror to some degree too. I have a special place for certain kind of B horror movies. But it does seem to be like when you care about the characters, when you don't, you know, like growing up, like slasher movies, I'd like almost fast forward to like the character development parts, you know, like you meet the group of kids, they come to the camp, they have to come up with some like B story to keep things moving. And it's like, when is the killing going to start?
It always feels like perfunctory and inorganic, like much like porno films that attempt to have plot, attempt to have plots, particularly like from that, like the 1970s period.
Oh yeah.
But going back to The Fly, there's like a moment where Goldblum, like his mandible falls off into the sink, if I'm remembering correctly. And I one of my worst fears is losing a tooth. I've had dreams. I think many of us have had dreams about losing teeth. I think that symbolizes like disempowerment. And fortunately, I haven't had a dream about losing teeth in a while. So I guess that's a good indicator of where I'm at emotionally. but it is still a fear of mine, like losing my teeth. I'm like lucky to have all my natural teeth.
Never had any injuries or, you know, any teeth knocked.
I've never broken a bone. I've never broken a bone. I chipped a front tooth slightly when I was a kid running from one room to another. But it's like it's not even visible.
Right. Yeah. Well, talk about real life body horror. My teeth are actually like kind of whittling away almost every year. Like it feels like somebody's like shining them down to like, you know, like rocks or something, you know. What I mean, yeah. And for years I thought it was grinding at night, but it turns out it's like acid reflux, and it's like slowly dissolving my teeth, and I can feel them becoming like more thin and brittle every, you know, year pretty much.
That is horrifying.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, yeah, it is. It's like they're just like, you know, just like it's like somebody took a piece of wood and is like whittling it down for each tooth, and like one of these days one of them's just gonna crack.
Are they getting sharper at least?
No, unfortunately not. Unfortunately I haven't mastered the art of directing the acid reflux. I'll tell you, is there any word that sounds more like what it actually is than acid reflux?
That's acid just reflux perfect. But I don't want to say them.
All right, let's read the last confession we have here. This is from Mike Hill, Salem, Massachusetts. From what I understand, Salem may have had its own body horror incident that involved more weight at one point. Mike says, Martyrs, brutal French existential extreme body horror. A group of religious fanatics, and spoiler alert for Martyrs as well as The Fly, a group of religious fanatics kidnap people with the idea that if they can inflict enough damage to a person's body, the person might experience some sort of heavenly out-of-body vision of what is beyond this fleshly life. They actually accomplish it, and the secret is whispered to the leader of the religious fanatics. You know what? I'm not going to read the next line because that kind of spoils it. But, you guys seen Martyrs?
I have not. I've heard of it.
Me too. I have not seen it. I feel like it pops up on my feed like, you know, like the 20 most shocking horror movies that you can't watch. But I have never seen it myself. What about you, Paul?
Haven't seen it.
All right. Well, This makes for an interesting conversation then. None of us have seen it. No, it does sound like a good movie, though. Almost sounds like, what are those people called? Like whip themselves into, you know, holiness, you know, like torture themselves. And
yeah, I don't remember the name, but like in, what is that, Dan Brown?
This is a great podcast.
With Tom Hanks.
And us trying to remember stuff for a movie that we haven't seen.
Yeah, exactly.
The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code. And there's one of the, I don't think he's a priest, but he might be like a, he's definitely aesthetics? Some sort of Catholic.
Is that what they're called?
Yes. I believe
okay.
You're right.
Okay. Right. Yeah. And Buddha, you know, in the Siddhartha story, he was kind of doing that, right? Like he was trying to, you know, make his earthly life as torturous as possible to grow spiritually.
I think in a lot of religions, I mean, it wouldn't go as far as necessarily torturing yourself, but there is this idea that you kind of have to let go of earthly pleasures sometimes to the point of suffering.
Right.
To be worthy of or to transcend to, like, I guess I didn't know that this happened in this movie where the goal is to kind of find the secret to life, which does intrigue me more to watch it. But yeah, it's interesting, I guess, in a lot of religions, whether or not it goes that far.
Right.
It's very rare. I guess you see this now more with like prosperity preaching, but that religions like have all the fun in the world. Eat as much as you want. Live a decadent life. Do everything.
Do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. It's there's this suffering often, or at least guilt if you're not suffering, tied to the final stage may be, if it's some form of enlightenment, some gateway to your version of heaven.
Right. That's why we need more frat boy messiahs, you know. That would,
please. That yeah, would then they become more fun. Then that we'll find a Netflix special on those people too.
Let me tell you guys my intro into what I believe to be body horror, which I didn't know was body horror at the time. And in fact, that was one of those terms that, like, when I finally heard it, I was like, oh, wow, that really makes sense. I didn't realize that was a thing, but that makes a lot of sense. The first R-rated horror film I ever saw was A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. You guys seen that one? Underrated entry in the Nightmare franchise, if you ask me.
I don't think I've gone all the way to 5.
There's a scene where a boy is riding on a motorcycle, and Freddy kind of like takes over his motorcycle and begins like stripping his flesh away and replacing it with like kind of making him part machine with the motorcycle. And he's like cracking jokes the whole time. And there's a scene where he's just skull and like frightened eyeballs. And that really freaked me out.
You're reminding me, I have not seen that one, but one of the freakiest things, I have always been deathly. Fear is the wrong word. I'm so revolted by bugs. I literally have like a physical aversion to them, particularly things like palmetto bugs, water bugs, those kind of. And I don't know if it was in the first or the second, but it is A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is it four?
Where he turns him into the roach.
Yes.
And then in the Roach Motel, and that image.
Yes.
Is like forever in my head.
Absolutely.
It is one of the most horrifying, disgusting things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. You're familiar with that one, Paul?
The Nightmare on Elm Street, what, 2, 3?
Which four, one? Where she's turned into a Kafka.
Yeah, I've seen them all.
Most Kafka-esque of the Freddy kills.
It's very Kafka-esque. Yeah, he turns him into a roach and then then squishes him.
Yeah, and the fact that he's joking and like mocking her in a joking way the whole time makes it even more horrific to me.
Yeah, I guess, you know, honestly, that's probably why it resonated with me so much, is because if I were in that movie, if I was one of those people, that probably would be the way he'd kill me. That would be probably one of my greatest fears and nightmares.
Right.
So
what
like,
I appreciate
wow,
about
nailed it.
The Nightmare on what I appreciate about Nightmare on Elm Street is the way that Freddy Krueger's comedic sensibilities develop over the arc of the series. He's virtually silent in the first one, and with each entry, I feel he's given gradually more.
Right. That's what one-liners. That's what I tell people when they get into comedy too. Is like, you're not going to be funny right away. It takes some time. Look how long it took Freddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Developed over years. You guys know Nightmare on Elm Street is like weirdly based on real events somehow, like yeah. in a way that's absolutely shocking.
Story that Wes Craven had read, I think, in a local newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. There's a specific type of sleep paralysis that only occurs in certain East Asian communities or cultures.
Okay, yes,
I've heard of this. That actually kills you, literally kills mm-hmm. you.
I think it's Hmong. It's in the Hmong.
Right, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
People, and I think it targets the men. And they yes. have a name for it. I forgot because in that culture,
I think it was called
like
sudden nightmare death syndrome for a while.
Yeah,
and they've made it a little less, you know, cinematic in the title over the years. And it's something. I think it has something to do with enlarged hearts. But it's and like it's, you know, connected to the placebo effect. They think it's still pretty much a mystery, but it's like your dreams can literally kill you, which is horrifying.
Have either one of you ever had sleep paralysis?
Fortunately, no.
No, and that is like one of my greatest fears. And from what I hear, it's actually suggestible, not unlike the placebo effect. And the more you talk about it, the more likely it is to happen.
Well, I had it happen once, and that's what's so weird. It's that I'm a pretty heavy sleeper. I'm a very vivid dreamer, but I'm also a heavy sleeper. So I don't experience like half awake, half asleep stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because there's some people, I think people who get it frequently, it's often triggered by, I don't know, like sleeping on your stomach a lot, people will say. Huh. But for me, it was there was no particular trigger, but I just remember waking up one night, or so I thought I was awake, and I felt what felt like someone pressing down on my chest into the bed. Like I could feel the weight of them.
Right.
And I opened my eyes and I tried to say something to my husband and I couldn't move my vocal cords.
Oh my God.
And then I started hearing something whispering into my ear, my left ear. And it sounded like a demon was like reciting like Latin demonic things I couldn't hear. And luckily as it was happening, because again, I'm paralyzed, I thought, okay, I was able to think, oh, this is sleep paralysis because you're paralyzed. Just let the demon do his thing. Just let him talk to you. And who knows? It was probably less than a minute. And then slowly the weight lifted off, and then slowly I was able to like move my body, but that sensation of like just not being able to like speak or anything. And then finally I was like, I could just like move my vocal cords again.
And why are demons always involved? Like, what is the evolutionary purpose of this thing?
I don't know. And it was completely auditory. There was no visual. Like usually some people will see like a demon, a figure. This was completely
face above them, or like an old witch in the corner.
What was so freaky and just how crazy your mind is it wasn't that I just heard him. I could feel the presence, you know, the way you feel someone.
Yeah,
so I could feel something was leaning on my side, and I, in a way that it wasn't just like, you know, hearing something like a radio. It literally felt like someone was like leaning by my side. It was crazy.
See, I'm open to new experiences. I think I would welcome a sleep paralysis episode.
Yeah.
I don't mind having nightmares. It's just like a movie that my subconscious has made for me. That's how I approach it.
Yeah, I think I've rarely had a nightmare that I was so terrified. I kind of feel the same way. I'll just wake up and be like, exhausting dreams. Yeah, I've had exhausting dreams where
you can't get sued for plagiarizing your own nightmares.
Yeah, where like I've woken up tired because the dream was so like active, where I actually felt like I didn't sleep that night. It was just.
It really won't be long before AI is sampling people's nightmares, though.
Oh, they get that neural link in there. They're going to.
Yeah, I'll be like, dude, I dreamed about that. Come on, you didn't write that.
Totally took my dream.
Well, I hear you, Paul. Like, I do kind of like having nightmares. You know, they're interesting. And it's nice to wake up from them. You know, a lot of times I'll be praying, like, please, God, let this be a dream.
Yes.
And then you wake up. Yeah. And then you wake up and you still have more time to sleep and you go pee and you come back and it's like the best feeling ever. You know, it's like I get to sleep more and this horrific nuclear holocaust didn't happen. Although you think I'd be a little more grateful. Like, to me, when a nightmare is happening, it feels like it is really happening. Like, that is your reality. And I'm like praying that it's not real. And then it's not real. And I'm grateful for like 2 seconds.
I have enough autonomy in my nightmares that I tell myself, I hope this is just a dream.
Right. Me too. Me too.
Like I've often had dreams where I've killed someone, not in the dream, but before the dream. So I've like crossed that line and there's this anxiety of, you know, it's only a matter of time before I'm caught.
Right.
And just living with the knowledge that I'm a murderer.
Sure. Do I turn myself in? I always get that kind of anxiety.
And then I always tell myself in those dreams, I hope I wake up from this.
Yeah. My most common, I think this is kind of like teeth falling out. It happens a lot, but I will be doing something like running errands. And then in the middle of the errand, so in the middle of the grocery store, I'll suddenly look down and realize I'm completely naked.
Yes, yes.
And or just naked from the waist down. And I have this sudden realization, and then the humiliation washes over me, and I'm trying to find my way back
right
home right. Now knowing that I'm naked and all the right. humiliation. That's one of my worst.
Oh, yeah. I have that pretty frequently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I don't have a lot of recurring dreams, but that's one of them. Like, should I just like act like nothing's wrong? Like, is this like okay? You know, are other people doing this? You know,
even in my dream, I'm like, I wish I just hadn't realized it, because clearly I got it to this point naked and I didn't care, and now the humiliation is just like washing over me. It's so strong.
Yeah,
and
I'm just,
like, my heart's racing. It's so awful.
You know what? One I always have, and I don't understand why, because it never actually happened. It was like. not being able to find a class in high school.
That's a common one.
Yeah.
And I think that one's related a lot to stress.
Right. But when did you ever have that problem in high school?
No.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I haven't, but for some reason, the mind, that's a right. common one, not being
it's
able to
so,
find
it's
a class.
So specific for something yeah. that like rarely happens.
Yeah. It's funny how we like in the ether or collective consciousness, whatever you want to call it. There's just certain things that we all that translate into our dreams very
similarly.
You should
make an episode around that.
Yeah, I haven't seen this, but you know that the man, have you seen this man in your dreams?
Oh, yeah,
that very popular internet thing.
It should be.
I don't see the man in my dreams. I never have, but apparently a lot of people have.
I think that's actually made up. I hate to burst your bubble.
Do you think that people think they've seen the man once they see it? Like it's suggestion?
Yeah, I think it's been suggested. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I'm like, I haven't seen this dude. That's not one of them. My teeth will fall out.
Right. I'll be remember
naked.
That brow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any. I don't remember that guy. Or he might just be so kind of like he's not distinctive. You know, he just looks like a guy. You might have seen him out in the world and it kind of just transposes. Oh yeah, I've seen that guy.
I don't know. I think his unibrow kind of stands out.
Like, I forgot.
I think I'd remember that. Do you know what we're talking about, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that somebody made that up, right? Like that was
Well, they made the poster. Yeah, it was an experiment. Yeah. But what was shocking was how many people claimed to then have seen the poster and go, oh my God, you've seen this man in your dreams too.
Right.
And I don't know if the person who originally made it did see those in his dreams and just wanted to mess with people or completely made the guy up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's brilliant nonetheless. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
It's definitely part of, you know, internet lore history.
Definitely. For sure. Yeah. Somebody else did an experiment like that where they created like a ghost with a whole backstory and everything. And then people started like recounting their own stories with the ghost that, you know, and like their memories of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the power of suggestion is very strong, so I wouldn't...
Definitely. In fact, in doing a little research on that sleep paralysis dream demon phenomenon, I actually came to the conclusion that the Nightmare on Elm Street series itself may have even perpetuated the phenomenon of the nightmare deaths, because they seem to coincide with the series. Like, I mean, the newspaper reports were a few years before... But after that, it seemed to exist while the Nightmare on Elm Street and continue while the series existed. And I wonder if that's like a possible cyclical thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I don't know. I don't know if people – I mean, there's two different things, because there's that Hmong community disease thing, which I think in their culture they have a separate name for it, kind of like this
– Yeah.
identity instead of the scientific phenomenon that they call it. And then there's just plain old sleep paralysis, which doesn't physically harm you anyway. It's just this weird
right.
state of kind of between sleep and awakeness where your body is still paralyzed as if it's asleep, but your dreams are still happening.
Yeah, and it's never anything fun. Like, why is it always like a witch or something horrible?
Yeah,
it's never a wet dream.
It's never a wet dream. Yeah. It's never like, you know, the giraffe from Toys R Us comes and visits you or something like that. It's always something terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. Why does the brain, when it does that, choose to put the freakiest possible demonic right. type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot, God.
Yeah.
Before we go, I want to bring up what I believe was probably the first instance of me observing, you know, body horror that actually startled me as a child. Do you guys remember Superman 3?
I mean, I've seen it. It's been a while. Which one is that with the three aliens and tights?
No, that was two. In Superman 3, okay. There's like an evil Superman, which was scary enough. There's like bad Superman that's fighting Clark Kent. And then there is, at the end, a woman who kind of falls into a supercomputer and gets taken over by it. And like turns her into like an evil robot slave kind of thing. And there's like eye stuff going on and wires and everything. I think that was like the first instance to me of witnessing body horror. Paul, you seen that one?
Yeah, so long ago, I have no memory of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I have no memory of like Superman 4, 3, 4.
Right.
So she, recap that for me again, she fell into a machine.
They had like kind of a giant supercomputer machine type of thing going on. I think it was maybe supposed to be like Brainiac, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's just kind of like, she falls into it and the computer like takes her over and turns her into like an evil robot and just kind of like completely, you know, there's like crap going into her head and her eyes like turn a different color and like it was just horrifying.
Oh, okay.
And I remember thinking like that horrifies me in a way that I can't quite explain right now. In my 4-year-old brain, you know what I mean?
Do you remember that movie? Well, it's Stephen King story, but Lawnmower Man?
Yes. Yeah.
Was that, I'm trying to remember, because I remember watching it. I remember it being good. It was a long time ago, but it was similar. Wasn't it similar? And like, it was like a mentally challenged guy. And then somehow he gets like some sort of access.
Yeah, he gets like sucked into a VR, like a, you know, an early 90s CGI VR.
He becomes like a guinea pig for this scientist played by Pierce Brosnan, who uses VR to improve or increase one's intellectual capacity. It's sort of like Flowers for Algernon.
Right.
Virtual reality.
Yeah. In fact, it had more to do with Flowers of Algernon than the actual Lawnmower Man story, which I believe was so different than the movie that they were legally required to take Stephen King's name off of it.
And then there was sequel, Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace, which was starred Matt Frewer, who was Max Headroom in the 80s.
Oh, and
was directed
by one of the Max Headroom directors.
Oh,
and it's a terrible film, but interesting pedigree.
You know what would be a good episode for you is Signal Interruptions. Have you, like the Max Headroom singing?
I find that really freaky.
Though it's probably just some pranksters.
Sure.
I've always found that really freaky, that incident.
And the statute like of limitations has expired on that. So those guys can come forward now with impunity. They should.
That would
they're
be
like,
amazing.
They're like folk heroes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be, I would love to hear how they pulled it off.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be an interesting topic. I don't know if there's enough like instances of that people know about, though. Like,
no,
are some other ones?
There are only two. There was that, and then there was the Captain Midnight incident, which I think preceded that by a few years. And that was a text message, not a literal text message as we know them now, but it was text that interrupted, I believe, the HBO broadcast to complain about the price of an HBO subscription. And it was signed Captain Midnight. So that and the Max Headroom piracy incident.
There was one other one.
I believe those are the only two known successful attempts at broadcast signal.
Did the other guy come forward?
I don't believe so. I believe that Captain Midnight also remains anonymous.
Wow.
I could be wrong.
What was the other one, Nina?
I can't recall. I could have sworn there was one other one, but I'm drawing a blank right now. Maybe it was that one, but I thought there was one other one.
I feel like there's
if
others,
I come
like
upon
in
it,
other
I'll
countries
let you know,
and stuff. Like there, you know, there's like radio interruptions and things like that, wasn't there?
Yeah, and I also maybe you could just throw in like freaky call-ins, like that Art Bell.
Right.
I don't know if you're that famous like person that called into one of Art Bell's shows and was basically claiming all this like conspiracy theory stuff that he was part of this like government blah, blah, blah. And I mean, again, I don't believe it, but just hearing it is often scarier than the actual truth of it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Also, another interesting one is the Lost Boy Larry broadcast. Mm-hmm. You guys heard about that?
That might be what I was thinking of. Let's see, signal.
Where a kid. Who they think was a kid said he was in a car accident and it was like flipped over in a ditch somewhere in the desert and he was communicating on his father's CB and he couldn't get out of the truck. And
everyone's trying to save him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're like searching all around and then there's like obvious pranksters jumping in, but they can't really tell, you know, where the pranking began or not. And to this day, they have not figured it out. And the people who heard the initial broadcast like swear up and down there was no way it was a prank.
So I just did a quick search. There's a couple of lesser known ones.
All right.
One looks really freaky. The Wyoming incident is one.
That just sounds terrifying somehow.
And the image that they have for it is freaky.
What is it? A picture of someone in Wyoming?
It's just this like faded black and white shadowy picture of a guy's face. But again, just mysterious enough to just be really freaky.
Sure.
And then I guess there's a Nickelodeon one, but I just did like a quick Google search. But obviously the big one was the Max Headroom one, because I think it's just because didn't it happen during, was it like a baseball game or something? Something was like a lot of people.
There were two intrusions that evening perpetrated by the same people. The first one was brief and without sound, and it was during an evening news broadcast. Then the second more sustained one was during an episode of Doctor Who.
That's what it was, Doctor Who, yeah, which is a kind of popular show. And obviously, a lot of people watched the news, especially back then.
Yeah.
So I feel like
I think it was
got
like
a lot of
87, I want to say, is when that happened.
Yeah, so it's like, how many news channels are you watching? So it probably had a lot of eyeballs on it. I don't think these other ones did, but they do look freaky.
I when I hear about stuff like that, it makes me yearn to like to have been there.
Oh, yeah.
To have experienced it firsthand. I kind of, you know, and I maybe should admit this, but I lived in New York during 9/11 and I was like a mile away, but I was asleep through the whole thing. And I was awakened by like my roommate's girlfriend who was panicked and crying. And my only thought then was like, oh, what now? You know, and then she told me, oh, the Twin Towers have fallen. New York is under terrorist attack. And, you know, part of me, like, I wish I'd at least been awake to have experienced that in real time.
Sure.
It's perverse, but I had the same thought like with the Oscars. I was watching the Oscars when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, and I had turned away, and I was like on my phone, and then like the sound cut out, and I realized something was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But I missed out on the actual, happened?
Right.
Well, yeah,
I
funny.
Had that once. I'm sorry, go ahead, Nina.
Oh, I grew up in New York City, and I went to college. My first week in college as a freshman was 9/11 happened. So I had just left New York City. I was in college for maybe 2 or 3 days. And my best friend, she went to the same school and she actually lost a family member there. But similarly, I was sleeping and I got a phone call from her and she goes, turn on the TV. And I'm like, I'm a college student. I'm like sleeping and I'm like drowsy. I'm like, what is going on? And what was also disorienting is she says to me, remember when we were joking about someone attacking New York? And I was like, I wasn't there for this conversation. She was mistaken. So I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, turn on the TV. And then I saw the smoking tower, but it wasn't necessarily, oh, I wish I had seen it. But just like the feeling of like, you're not in your community at the time that this is crazy. You know, you've lived somewhere your whole life. And the week you leave, all hell breaks loose down there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a very jarring feeling.
Yeah, okay, so you guys are both from New York, so you knew each other already then.
Yeah, everyone in New York knows each other.
Yeah,
everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, small town.
Okay, so my version of that, and this wasn't 9/11, but I was attending a Danzig concert probably 15 years ago. And I looked up and he was not on the stage. And it turned out he had fallen off the stage and broken his arm.
Oh, my God.
And he did the rest of the show, but they skipped the Misfits set at the end. And there was like nearly a riot. And I didn't get to see him fall off the stage. For some reason, I just missed that part.
Yeah, I would be disappointed.
It's not the Twin Towers, but.
No, but still. Remember when Kelsey Grammer fell off the stage? There's actually footage on YouTube. He was, I think it was like a Disney event, and the stage, it had this like jagged shape. So
just
fell into a crack and it stopped him cold. And he was just like, "Ooh, I'm fine. I'm fine." And honestly, I'm not like a Kelsey Grammer fan. So it was amusing. Experienced some Schadenfreude with that one.
Well, this could be a whole nother episode. We should come back and do the, it's almost like not so much a broadcast interruption as just like crazy stuff that was captured on live television
airwaves, crazy incidents.
All right, guys, any more thoughts on body horror we want to get into before we wrap it up?
One body horror that I feel is underappreciated is Society. You guys seen Society?
I have not.
Entity or the film?
The film.
Okay, not the concept of Society.
Correct, yeah.
Society is terrifying.
Late 80s. It's more about classism. I think the body horror element is secondary. But in the end, there's like this orgy in which a bunch of weird shit happens, and it's absolutely worth watching.
Orgy.
I'll add orgy to the list. Wow. I can give another recommendation. Something I saw recently, like within the past few months, a relatively newer movie called Swallow. And I think it's on Hulu. So if you have Hulu, you can watch it. And
does that have an orgy?
Orgy free.
Okay. Well, then I'm out. Sorry.
Complete opposite of an orgy. But it's basically about a woman who, this is very, very subtle. You could almost argue maybe it's not horror, though I found it horrific. But she is this like young, pretty woman who marries this guy who, you know, seemingly she's got it all. He's giving her a great life, but he kind of just wants her to stay home and be his pretty little like wife who prepares meals and everything.
Trophy
and
wife.
So she slowly starts to develop pica, which is, and so that is the perfect kind of what I was talking about, just doing things that kind of make you wince. The things she starts eating, you're not seeing what's going on inside of her body or any of the real gruesome stuff, but just watching her ingest these things is like a way to
kind of. What
kind of
things
like
does she ingest?
Like the one that really hurt me to watch was a thumbtack.
Oh, God.
Thumbtack. And there's more to it that I don't want to give away, but
so
yeah, Pica, she.
I mean,
it's basically.
I know it's a thing where you eat like weird things.
Like non-food items is kind of the definition.
But do you eat like things that will harm you like that? Like, is that part of it? Like,
well, pica is just a it's just a description, a very broad description to say eating things that are not food. But there can be different reasons. Like, say you have a nutritional imbalance that's severe.
Sure.
Suddenly you want to start eating like dirt. And it might be because you're lacking a mineral.
Yeah.
And then there's
people
that have, you know, disorders, you know, that for some reason their brain just like wants them to eat random things. And then I think there's different levels of the reasons. It's more, it's kind of like saying you have a cough, right?
Uh-huh.
The actual mechanism behind it is different across the board, but they
I think it's most often pregnant women who are afflicted with pica.
Pregnant women. That's kind of, I don't want to go too into it, but that kind of threads into this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you'll even see, I think that there's also like, there's a disorder, I can't remember the name, but it's basically where people eat super. There's that show. There's an entire show on it, probably on TLC, that just highlights people that eat weird things. Like, I only eat laundry detergent, for example, right?
Yeah.
Which is pica. And there's a disorder, basically, they're not super taster is not the thing, but they just cannot physically bring themselves to eat regular food. These people might only eat potatoes, for example, and then sometimes they'll also only be able to eat like tissue or like there's just something in the wiring where their brain
like a phobia of food. If it's not, obviously if it's something like thumbtacks or something like that, then it's not a good thing. But if it's something, you know, that doesn't really hurt you, like, is it that big of a deal? You know, like, can you just be like, hey, there's, you know, dirt's
on that show. I would remember like some of these people would be eating toilet paper, for example, for like 10, 15 years and they're fine. But the doctors would be like, just because you're fine now doesn't mean it couldn't, you know, just like a dog would eat like a sock or something. It can cause basically like it can like just mess up your colon. Right. You get a blockage and then it can go from 0 to 100 very quickly. Right. Where your colon is blocked and now you're having emergency surgery or a sepsis or something.
Sure.
And
I believe that blockage is called a bezoar, which is another word that sounds like what it describes.
like bee sore.
Bees, I think that's what it's called. An intestinal blockage like that is like a an accumulation. Yeah.
Of stuff.
I believe it's called the bee sore.
It's like the human version of those giant balls of that the sewage companies will find. Like baby wipes. And
there's
fat.
A name for those.
Like a rat
as
queen
well.
Of baby wipes.
Oh yeah, exactly. yeah, there is a name for that thing, and some of them are huge. They're just like unbelievably large.
Like shitbergs.
Is that what it is?
It's something like that. I don't think shitberg is the word, but it's something very similar.
It is a word that is not
shit
super scientific.
Right ahead.
I think it's weird because I do think the human body is strange and it can tolerate a lot. So like some of these people, they've been eating Tide powder for 20 years and they're not dead.
Expensive too.
Yeah. It's like I remember just the image of someone like carrying it around in the Ziploc bag and she would just like snack on little pieces of powdered detergent all day. So I guess it's weird because it's not like there's any studies. Mm-hmm. No one's going to fund the longitudinal study of detergent eating for 30 years and whether or not it shortens your lifespan. But I do think it's one of those things that can very suddenly turn on you, even though you've
been
fine. It's
called a fatberg. It is actually called a fatberg.
Yes, because it has a lot of grease from everyone.
I was close.
Grease. Yeah.
It's just
less shit, more fat in it.
Yeah. I've always wanted to open a restaurant that caters to people with pica. I think it's very niche. And you know, it might not pass health code, but it's certainly a novel idea. And the overhead would be low, I feel like.
Right.
Because dirt is pretty accessible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but if you're, we're talking like, there's like snobs who will only do like, you know, like the top shelf laundry detergent and whatnot.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be really like, is this Italian clay?
Yeah.
All right, you guys.
On that note,
I think you could actually eat Italian clay, actually, but that's another.
Yeah, but then you got to do all the wine pairings and everything.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's way too much for me. You guys, this has been a fun episode. Thank you so much for coming by, Nina and Paul. Once again, the podcast is called The Twisted Mirror Podcast. Please check it out, listeners. It is a very, very well made podcast, and I hope everyone checks it out. And thank you so much for coming by. We'll see everybody next time on The Confessional.
Bye.
Bye.